Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
The Legal Services Regulatory Authority has just published its second complaints report for 2021, which shows it received 673 complaints about legal practitioners in a five-month period, with 646 of those complaints closed. The report provides details of the number and nature of complaints about legal practitioners, solicitors and barristers in this case. Let's find out more now, because we're joined by the Chief Executive of the LSRA, the Legal Services Regulatory Authority, Brian Doherty. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us again. I suppose, first of all, if we deal with, and I'm having a look at your report as well, you began receiving and investigating complaints relating to solicitors and barristers on the 7th of October 2019. So you're comparatively new in this area, are you?
We are indeed. We started taking complaints just under 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years later this week, and we've received 2,719 complaints to date.
Now, how do people make a complaint?
Well, you can make a complaint in writing directly to the LSRA. There's a complaints form on our website. We've a landline that people can ring if they've got queries in relation to complaints. It's 1-859-2911, and the website is www.lsra.ie, and there's a wealth of information for both consumers and legal practitioners.
We will give out those numbers again at the end of our chat. Yeah. When somebody does contact you, what's the process?
So once someone makes a complaint to us, I would say that there's three types of complaints that the LSRA can deal with. So we can, clients of legal practitioners can complain in relation to inadequate service or excessive costs, and then anyone can make a complaint of misconduct to us. The complaint has to be in writing, and once we receive it in writing, the initial step is that we assess it for admissibility. And that's what we call the pre-admissibility phase. And in that phase, there's an investigation undertaken. We take the complaint, we send it to the legal practitioner, the solicitor, or the barrister. We allow them to comment on it. And I would say that, as reflected in the report, a lot of our complaints resolve at that stage. 183 complaints in the last five-month period were resolved in pre-admissibility, where the complainant and the legal practitioner were able to engage together to come to some sort of resolution. If it's not possible to resolve it at that point, and if the complaint's deemed to be admissible, and if it relates to inadequate service or excessive costs, then the LSRA will again attempt to mediate the complaint between the parties. If we fail to do that, then the LSRA can determine the complaint, so we can determine as to whether or not services have been inadequate or whether or not costs have been excessive, and we can direct the legal practitioner, if necessary, to take a number of steps, including to waive or refund fees or to take steps to remedy if the services were inadequate. Now, another stream of complaints, the misconduct complaints, if a complaint is determined to be admissible and determined to be misconduct, then it's sent to an independent complaints committee for their investigation and consideration of the complaint, and they have further powers. They can direct a legal practitioner to go on a professional competence scheme to arrange for service to be conducted, etc. And the very, very top end, the most serious cases, if the complaints committee feel that they're not within their remit, they can refer them to a legal practitioner's disciplinary tribunal, which is wholly completely independent of the LSRA. Sorry for the whistle stop.
No,
the process.
And I suppose, Brian, just one question before we delve into maybe the themes of some of the reports, is ultimately when you recommend sanctions, can you implement those? Are the legal practitioners bound by whatever decisions you come up with?
They are. If a legal practitioner, if we can't resolve the complaint, if it doesn't resolve in pre-admissibility, if the complaint, then we attempt to mediate it. And if for whatever reason it doesn't resolve, if, for example, a legal practitioner doesn't engage, or team can examine the information that we've got, the evidence has been put forward, and can determine the complaint and make a direction to the legal practitioner, for example, to waive or to refund fees. There's then a period of 30 days in which either the legal practitioner or the complainant can request that the case be referred to what's known as a review committee. So there's a review committee independent from the LSRA. It's made up of laypersons and legal practitioners who then examine the decision taken by the LSRA to determine the complaint and to make a direction. And they've got the power to waive or sorry to amend the direction that we've made, or to affirm the direction that's made. And once a statutory period of time has elapsed, it's then binding on the legal practitioner. So if they don't go to the review committee, it's 30 days after the decision is taken, and the LSRA has the power to enforce those directions.
Now, we talked about, by the way, the complaints that have come in. You have total 443 complaints alleging misconduct, with 193 complaints about what's called an alleged inadequate standard of legal services, a further 37 relating to alleged excessive costs, overcharging, and that. In terms of themes, and having a look at your report on that, I noticed themes emerging from the complaints. Cybercrime, for example, is listed as one of them, and you have a number of case studies as well in regards to that.
Well, in relation to cybercrime, and I don't want to cause any panic to think that this is widespread, but instead it's the impact that an issue such as cybercrime can have on the solicitor, legal practitioner, or the client. So the key message we'd have to your listeners in relation to cybercrime is that it's very, very rare for a legal practitioner, a solicitor, to change their bank account, and especially so in the midst of a transaction. So solicitors, legal practitioners should communicate with their clients to explain that this will be very rare, and if they receive any communication during the course of a transaction, for example, a property conveyance, that relates to their legal practitioner changing their account and says saying that money should be sent to an alternative account, to immediately be suspicious about that and to check with their legal practitioner. As I say, I don't want to cause panic. It's not something that's happening widespread. It is an increased risk. It has been an increased risk during COVID, but because of the impact it has in the instances where it does occur, it's one of the themes that we've highlighted. We've also repeatedly highlighted the theme of communication, in that we are encouraging legal practitioners to communicate very clearly with their clients around issues such as cost, the cost of legal proceedings, around the risk of legal proceedings, and the time that legal proceedings will take. And we've repeatedly outlined the theme in relation to probate and wills and the level of complaints that we get in relation to matters around the discharge of wills.
Now, the main areas, as we said, that have attracted attention are litigation, family law, wills, probates, conveyancing. A total of 123 complaints were made by banks relating to outstanding solicitors' undertakings, which is a commitment given by a solicitor which is relied upon and is legally binding. Failure to comply with an undertaking is investigated as a complaint of alleged misconduct. Now, your complaints and resolution staff received a total of 1,236 phone calls and emails requesting information or complaints. I noticed from your report that in terms of complaints closed post admissibility, 316 complaints were deemed to be inadmissible. Just a brief profile as to why a complaint might be inadmissible.
So the inadmissibility process, as I said, is in effect an investigation. So we get the complaint, we send it to the legal practitioner, the legal practitioner is an officer to the comment, and then quite often that comment is then passed to the complainant for them to give an opportunity to come back to us. And what we found is one of the main grounds in which a complaint will be found to be inadmissible is where it's without foundation. So, and it could be a communication issue. A complainant believes that a thing had not been done during the course of a legal proceeding, so solicitor didn't respond to a letter or did something of that nature. When we then approach the legal practitioner, they're able to show us evidence that that's not the case, that what they've been accused of actually didn't happen. So those are the most common complaints. However, I would stress that in that pre-admissibility phase, there's a high level of resolution of complaints where we've been able to a certain degree, repair the relationship between the complainant, the consumer, and the legal practitioner.
All right, it's good stuff, and it's reassuring indeed. That's the second of these reports, by the way, covering the period 27th of March 2021 to the 3rd of September 2021. As we said, you can engage with the LSRA, the Legal Services Regulatory Authority, by going to the website on which this full report is available, lsra.ie. And Brian, did you mention a phone number there earlier?
I did indeed. So phone lines are open between 10 and 12:30 every morning. The number is 01859 2911. We can't provide legal advice because we're independent, but we can advise through the complaints process.
All right, that number again for people is 01-859-2911 or lsra.ie if you have a concern or just looking for information regarding the engagement with your legal practitioner, whether that be a solicitor or a barrister, in any matter whatsoever pertaining or relevant to legal affairs. Dr. Brian J. Doherty is Chief Executive of the Legal Services Regulatory Authority, giving us his overview of that particular report. Thanks for that, Brian. Good morning to you, and thanks
for
joining us on this morning's Kildare Today. Now, just something changed, and we're continuing this throughout the month of October. As restrictions ease, it's understandable that people can experience varying degrees of anxiety. So remember the following. It's perfectly okay to feel anxious. We all need to adjust in our own time. If anxiety is becoming a problem, don't wait to get support. If anxiety is recurring and impacting on your life, reach out for a little more support. There's a lot of trusted mental health information, help and support out there. Everything from online self-help to confidential helplines. So whatever you're going through, you can always find trusted information on mental health supports and services at the website yourmentalhealth.ie. There's also a 24-hour helpline, information line there. It's free phone, 1-800-111-888, and KFM is delighted to be supporting this initiative throughout October. That number again is 1-800-111-888. Let's hear more.
The Mental Health Minute from KFM and the HSE.
There are loads of things that make us feel a bit anxious from time to time, like an empty phone battery or a full work schedule or Christmas decorations in September. What's that all about? My point is, it's perfectly normal to feel anxious sometimes, but if you experience ongoing anxiety that's affecting your everyday life, it can have a serious impact. One of the best things you can do is try and identify times and things that make you anxious and try and do less of them. Equally, find things that help you de-stress, like exercising or just relaxing, and try to do more of those. Don't forget to talk to friends or family, because nothing helps as much as reaching out and talking about how you're feeling. Whatever you're going through, you can always find trusted information on a range of mental health supports and services at yourmentalhealth.ie or through the 24-hour Your Mental Health information line on 1800 111 888. I think my battery's about to...
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Couple of quick messages then coming in, and we got somebody sent me in one about Amazon's virtual assistants, which is built into Echo smart speakers. So, as I say, if you're looking to get KFM on your smart speaker, you can ask it, Alexa, tune into Kildare's KFM. Use the word Kildare, because there's a KFM in South Africa, and there is one in, I think, Nigeria maybe, and there's one in the United States, so there are different KFMs, but you might like to listen to those too, now and again. Clem, I note that PD Fora hosts their annual meeting in Killarney this week. 30 years ago, after a big struggle with the then establishment, military and civilian, PD Fora was born. Thanks to its founders, people around the country, Kildare had three presidents of the association. This message is from Iggy, I think, in Dublin. Our ex-president Iggy. Let's see anywhere more. The late Jack Whelan from Newbridge was the first president, followed by Jim Brady of Kildare Town. Is that our own Jim that constantly sends me poems, I wonder? Jim Brady, is that you? Are you a former president of PD Fora? Let me know, please. And finally, the late William Webb of Athy, who served three terms. William Webb of Athy. I know a Caroline Webb in Athy. I wonder, was there a connection there? But sadly, lost his battle with cancer last year. Jim is the only living member of that Kildare group of former presidents, says Iggy in Dublin. Thanks, Iggy, for the message. Didn't know, but not surprised, of course, that there would have been three presidents of PD Fora. I fancy that William Webb, I might know the family connection there between himself and the aforementioned, but also the late Jack Whelan in Newbridge and Jim Brady. Oh, that must be our Jim that sends us the poems in. Iggy, thanks, and hope all is well up in the capital. Maria says, Clem, is this service just to do with fees, or does it cover other problems? Maria, it'll cover any issue that you have between yourself and your legal practitioner. Go to the website lsra.ie or ring them on 01 859 2911 and ask them what if you have any issue with your legal practitioner. And what's wrong with Shannon? Shannon says it's grand for ye who are downhearted, but Carta Ghuina Ian of Norishit, what people should do. Godfrey Kildare FM, Vexinius Fiarmar Animal and Stoshun. Shannon, we're not about to name KFM Kildare FM. I know you love An Ghaeilge, and I love An Ghaeilge as well, Shannon, but you can't sort of impose stuff on people who don't want it. And we're trying to use our Ghaeilge here in a way that will be inclusive and will involve everyone. Because the problem with the education system over the past hundreds of years is it rammed it down people's throats in a way that has made many people very negative towards what is a beautiful language. Tianga Usal Untakarfad, Agstan Broder Ringensha, or KFM Usad of Wanta Sagailga, but we're not going to shove it down people's throats, okay? So, while towns like Newbridge have a name in Irish, Drihid Nua, while Bagnanstown in Carlow has an official name in Irish, Munyavyog, locals refer to what they've always referred to, Bagnallstown or Newbridge or whatever. And I know my next guest will bear that out because Kathleen Funchin is a Sinn Féin TD for Carlo Kilkenny. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Clem. I actually have an office in Bagnallstown. Funny that you mention it. So, yeah, there's people always call it Munyavyog, or some people, of course, call it Bagnallstown. But, yeah, that is an age-old discussion in our area, too.
Yeah, and do people actually... And I worked with CKR myself for 10 years in the good old days, and I love the people of Carlo, I have to say. Great friends down there still, I have. But is there anybody in the area that actually refers to Bagnallstown as Munyavyog?
You would still hear people saying it, yeah, you would. And you'd often hear, if you say Bagnallstown, some people will correct you and say, you mean Munyavyog. So, yeah, it's still that tradition is there, definitely.
Yeah, Owen told me that on the train, the sign comes up as Munyavyog.
It does, yeah.
Munyavyog, of course, it's a beautiful Irish name. Look, I'm all for the Irish names. Now, I have to say, Kathleen, in all my time, 10 years on air with CKR, I can't ever recall hearing it referred to as Munyavyog. Now, I think it's far preferable to Bagnallstown, which is to do with the English rule of this country and so forth. Just as I think Drihid Nua, which is a direct translation now of Newbridge, I'm not so sure about that one. Munyavyog, what does that mean? The little hill, I think, or something. In regards to that, I won't put you on the spot over that.
I know. I was going to say little town, but sure, Pobble, I think, is town actually.
Pobble or Balje would be town. Yeah. Munyavyog, yeah. I think it's to do with the little hill or something like that. Somebody will correct me anyway. I love the Irish names, they're gorgeous. And Shannon is a great advocate of An Ghaeilge and things like that in the programme. But the thing is, the vernacular of this country is English at this stage, whether we like it or not. Now, I'm a confirmed Gaelgor, and I will always try Úsáid a Bhuantas Cúpla Focal and Seo Éirí Glór in a way that will make people recall their Cúpla Focal from their school days, because I think we all have much more Gaelge than we realise.
Yeah, and it's how it's taught too, isn't it? Like my own, I'd love to be fluent, but I've my own two kids, one in a Gael school, one in a Pobble, so that's my way of hoping to like pass on the language itself. So I would love to have that level that they have already myself, but you're right, it's about encouragement, because if you kind of put people off, we don't want
to be ramming it down. And we all know, Kathleen, we all go on the holidays abroad, suddenly everyone gets fluent in Irish.
You do get very kind of patriotic, don't you? Definitely.
You get fed up of being saying, are you England? No, we're Ireland.
That's very true.
And people suddenly discover how fluent they are in Gaelge, and particularly the more gargle they get into them, the better their Gaelge becomes, so the legend goes. Anyway,
I'm not sure
I believe it, you know. But anyway, Six Years, Tarran Shaw, Tarish Shock, Falcherot, and so forth. Kathleen, you're here to talk about something much more serious. Everybody agrees we have a childcare crisis in the country. You're bringing a motion before the Dáil today.
Yeah, so the motion is going to be discussed from 5:30 until about 7:30 this evening, and it's in relation to the childcare early year sector. So it's looking to reduce fees, also introduce a living wage, a proper wage scale for those who work in the sector, starting at the living wage. And then there's the issue of what we call sustainability for those providing the service. So it basically breaks down into three categories: the fees for parents, are very difficult, and we all know various stories of people struggling to pay the fees or maybe having to, you know, kind of reduce their hours in work or whatever it might be. And then we know as well that it's a very qualified sector. People are going to degree level and coming in at minimum wage, and in some places they're actually still signing on for social welfare during the summer. So the wages are an issue. And then there is an issue of, particularly in the last number of years, of people struggling to keep their services going. So it's clear it's not really working for anybody. And, you know, historically, we haven't had great investment in this area. Now, there probably has been an increase in the last number of years, but we're certainly playing massive catch-up, and that's part of the problem. So the motion tonight, and the reason we're having it tonight, is because obviously next week it's budget, and we're hoping to try and put a bit of pressure on government to actually do something in this year's budget, because I think it was really obvious last year that the whole childcare sector was totally left out of the budget. So it's the fees, to reduce the fees by one third in the first year, two thirds in the second year, to start the introduction of a wage scale, starting at the living wage, and then to look at helping providers with the sustainability. Like, anyone that's providing a service will say, you know, they're bogged down in reams and reams of paperwork. There's three different bodies that inspect the area instead of just one body. There's no common sense in that system as such. So there's reforms like that needed. And it would be an additional cost per year of 86 million in total. So obviously you'd have to build on that.
All right. Now, I wonder if Fine Gael are trying to steal your thunder, Kathleen, because a new Fine Gael report has called for a major rethink on the way Ireland supports children and the childcare sector.
Yeah.
It's a report from the party's new policy lab, as it's called, and it's proposing what is called a major reprioritisation of early childhood by the government's policy makers. The report is called Care of the Child, and it proposes giving childcare providers access to existing state facilities, that it wants to solve issues of pay in the childcare industry, and suggests a new career structure is needed, as well as proposing a new apprenticeship programme be introduced. What do you think of all of that, Kathleen?
To be honest, I actually welcome that. I genuinely do, because, you know, since I was elected in 2016, this sector is one I've kind of focused a lot on. Obviously, I'm the children's spokesperson, so, you know, that doesn't come as a surprise to anybody. But I genuinely do feel, I don't know how often I've raised issues with questions with the minister with various speeches, and there's times where you really genuinely think, obviously, the people working in the sector and parents have an interest, but in terms of government, I do feel like a lot of it has been falling on deaf ears. And even, like, that people agree with you, but nothing actually happens. So, I mean, there's a part of me sceptical in relation to, we've had this government for the past 10 years and we haven't really seen very much happen, not just in childcare, but in lots of areas. However, I do think this is, I would welcome it, and I genuinely hope they are serious about it. And I hope, particularly it being announced now, that it would mean we'll start to see some measures in this year's budget to address
All right.
that.
Okay, let's see what happens during that debate this evening and whether indeed Fine Gael's proposals might trump your emotion in terms of, and we'll see, are these aspirations that they're espousing, will they actually put forward a bill in relation to that as well, given that they are a party in government? Meanwhile, Kathleen, function according to our Shannon, Winyevyog means the little shrubbery.
So, oh, very good.
So hopefully we'll verify that. But Sinn Féin TD for Carlo Kilkenny introducing that motion on childcare this evening, which she estimates would cost 86 million euro a year, but would reduce fees considerably. Nobody will disagree with that particular sentiment, or indeed the ones in the Fine Gael care plan as well, provided that they are delivered. Kathleen, good talking to you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for your time. And speaking about Anamnaka Diaso Gaelga and all things being named Irish, our next guest, Owen Beattie, has a wonderful Irish double name as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Fianna Fáil councillor on the Claimanuth Municipal District and indeed Mayor of Kildare, Councillor Nisha O'Carroll. Fáilteas Jacques, Nisha.
Come on, good morning.
Let's look at the motions then that you brought forward to the recent meeting. First of all, you want the council to carry out remedial works to the footpaths in College Green and Cluneven in Maynooth.
So, College Green and Cluneven in Maynooth are two estates that back up into another. They're built between the 70s and 80s in Maynooth. So they're older estates, and they actually have a mixed demographic. So there'll be an older demographic in the estates, in both estates, and then you also have students as well. So there is a complete mix throughout the generation. So basically, neither estate has been upgraded in a long time. I'm looking for, obviously, updates or upgrades to the footpaths here. So basically, it'll be taken into consideration with LPT funds when the time comes.
It seems as though there were ramps to be installed on the Moyglare Road in Maynooth as part of the north-south corridor upgrade, but this didn't happen. Did you get any reason why not?
Yeah, so the Moyglare Road, most people will know it, Maynooth, where the GAA Club is. So when you come up from the main street or from the church, it's essentially a kilometre-long straight, and it's where the town has been developing over the past 10 years. So you have Moyglare Hall, you have Moyglare Abbey, you have Mariaville, and now you also have an entrance into the university, and now you have the two new secondary schools, of course, the Maynooth Education Campus and Grade School Rory. So there's 2,000 students going up every day walking to the secondary schools alone, let alone the primary school and the estates. So there is a massive problem with speeding. There needs to be a reduction in speeding. And by my recollection and reading, and indeed some constituents got on to me about initial plans that actually had ramps in the road. So what the council said is that these were the preliminary design stage. There were ramps, but that these ramps would have an impact on emergency services and noise levels as well. And that's why they weren't implemented, and that's why there are three different sets of lights. So I suppose what I said to the area engineer and to the council on Friday was, look, those lights aren't operating all the time. It is still a massive speed zone. So they've committed to doing a speed survey on the road and looking at ways of slowing down the speed on the Moyglare Road.
Okay, and then finally you touched on the primary school, the secondary school and the university all up around the same area there. You asked the council to invite Maynooth University to attend a meeting of the municipal district to discuss local matters. They said that subject to members' approval, they will issue that invitation. But what exactly are you looking to speak to Maynooth University about?
Yeah, so it was approved, and generally speaking, we would have kind of dialogue with the university on an annual or a biannual basis. So this is kind of where it stems from. But the primary reason, I suppose, is the lack of accommodation, and there's numerous reasons, but one of the things that stands out, and you know, you've discussed it on KFM, it's been discussed in local papers as well, has been the lack of student accommodation, but also the lack of accommodation for locals of the town, people wishing to live in the town. The thing is that Maynooth has always been able to accommodate the university and 10 to 11,000 students. It's been able to soak that up. The problem now is that Maynooth has grown exponentially in its own right. The university has grown exponentially, and so has Intel. So we now have a scenario where the university has a population exceeding between 15 and 20,000 with staff. The town is up around 20,000. You now have more staff in Intel as well looking to live in Maynooth. So there's a complete squeeze on accommodation in Maynooth. There's a squeeze on services, and there's no give. So, you know, the university needs to liaise more with the council, and indeed us as councillors. And I think Intel needs to be involved as well. And how the town is developing, how do they plan on providing accommodation for the increased student population? Because the town of Maynooth, and indeed Kildare County Council, can no longer afford to actually provide accommodation. And we need to look at a range of other areas, such as a second interchange of the motorway into Maynooth. We need to discuss traffic, we need to discuss healthcare. There's a million things that we need to be on the same page about, particularly as both of us grow, because Maynooth is a key growth town in the greater Dublin region, along with Swords and Bray. It is going to be essentially a mini city, let's call it spade a spade here, within the next 10 years. And we need to make sure that we're prepared for that.
Okay, and that motion was approved. So the council, I believe, now are issuing that invitation to Maynooth University. And we'll wait and see what comes if they do meet with the members of the Maynooth Municipal District. But Fianna Fáil councillor on that MD and indeed Mayor of Kildare, Nisha O'Carroll, Gurmahagut, Nisha.
I'm sure, Owen, that Nisha is well aware of the origins of his name. What a great meaning to the name Nisha. It means warrior. And indeed, Nisha was the nephew of King Cruachar Mac Nasa of Ulster. He was one of the sons of Uisnech. And it's one of the great stories of Irish mythology. The sons of Uisnech are exiles. It's usually found within stories called the Tán Bó Cúalnge, stories about Ulster. He becomes the lover of Deirdre, who was one of the greatest and most beautiful women in Irish mythology. But unfortunately, King Cruachan mac Nasa, the King of Ulster, he wants Deirdre for himself. Anyway, the two of them elope. He and his two brothers head off with Deirdre to Scotland. Eventually, Conor persuades them to return. But when they return, he betrays them and he kills them. It's a wonderful story. His brothers had beautiful names, Anle and Ardon as well. But Nisha, the name meaning warrior, and no doubt Councillor Nisha O'Carroll, you're a warrior too, in North Kildare. Thought that bit of information anyway might be useful to all and sundry.